the show. It's 400. We are here now. Oh my God, it's been a crazy day, a crazy morning. I've been trying, my God. Woo! So, this morning we have a guest. He's not from Clubhouse. His name is David Dieter. Man, it's an interesting thing behind his name. You say he changed his name from his name to his wife name, last name. That was crazy. But here today, I want to sit here and touch on some things that David has been involved in. So right now, we're waiting for David to pull up. He's still trying to get the hang of it. And then maybe if you guys want to have some conversation afterwards, I appreciate y'all. Farmer, what's going on? Farmer, I hope you stay in the audience so you can hear me run this, interview with someone that's not from the app. So let me make sure I get him in there. I'm going to send him another link to make sure he gets it. Okay, boom. So he'll be able to come in. So, all right. See, okay. Let me just see, stop it. Okay, we're here. Let me get in my bag. I'm trying to get in my bag. Good morning. It's a Saturday. Let's go. The Corner Club Rooftop Talk. I am interviewing someone, and the title is "Can Creativity Heal a Broken Society?" And I'm doing this interview with David Dieter. He should be in a few. Let's see how it goes, because he doesn't really have Clubhouse, so I just had to send him a link like, hey, David, this is the link. This is how we do it over here. And I had a lot of technical difficulty today. The thing is, I was supposed to do this meeting at 10 o'clock, and y'all know how I like to be punctual. I'm that type of person. But at the same time, I had my daughter set up for something, and that was her getting her hair done. I was hopefully her mom's going to be a good mom, and the bitch flunked out on me, and she went to go handle something else. So right now, I'm at the hair salon. Luckily, this lady is cool, so she was trying to help me while I was dealing with these technical difficulties. It was killing me. Oh shit. And so now I'm like, okay, this is my first time dealing with, this magnitude when it comes down to dealing with someone that's of high standards. And I look like shit. Check that shit out. Still, but yet I'm gonna get paid for it. You understand what I'm saying? So that is the goal today. So, this guy, David Dieter, let me bring something up on him. So he specializes in something called division, art, and truth. And that's what it comes to. Can creativity heal a broken society? Okay. Know what I need to do? I need to sit there and give him this link. That link, I already gave him that link right there. And make sure he'd be able to come in. I'm tired of apologizing. Where is this man? And so welcome to the 400 Club Rooftop Talk. Now listen, these conversations go deeper than the surface level, and we challenge perspective that most people are too comfortable to question, per se. I'm your host, J400, and today we have got a very interesting guest step into the room. We will be joined by David Dieter and his conceptual artist, whose work explores political polarization, societal fractures, and what happens when humans connections start to break down. He operates in a space that most avoid, where art meets discomfort and where ideas challenge identity. This is going to be something deep. This is going to be one of the most one of those conversations. So I'm gonna bring you up, Farmer, for a second, and I want you to help me. You can sit there cute on mute or get the boot. Hey, come up, Farmer. And then while I'm waiting for him, you and I can have this conversation and everything.
What's the word?
But when he comes,
I don't like how you call me cute. That was pause. It's too early.
Cute on mute. If you call yourself cute, that type of situation. And I just want you to sit here and, you know what I'm saying? So do me a favor. Play some music. Or, because I'm going to see if he's still stuck in the hallway. There he is. There we go. David is here. David is here, and we are joined by David right now, and that is my guy, Farmer. Farmer's a longtime friend of mine on an app. He's actually one of my proteges at one point, and I needed to keep the conversation going while you try to figure out how to get here, David, so I appreciate you. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties that we have endured thus far. How you doing today, David? You're on mute, David. David, you there? You're on mute. You got to push mic down at the left-hand corner. It's going to say mic on. I don't know if for iPhone, I think it's on the right.
Boom, you have to, boom, right there.
There we go, whew. David.
Oh, no, I know. Yes. Good thing you're holding my hand all the way there. I made it. Hi, guys.
We're here, David.
Thank you. All I had to do is press a button.
That's right. Hey, Dave. Hey, a Farmer, through the show, it's okay for you to make those noise for me. I'm fine with that. So, okay. So I gave them who you were. If you want me to rerun it all over again, I can.
Oh, it's good. That was good. Whatever you said.
Okay.
I'm going to go with it and see what they thought. I said.
Right. So basically, I welcome everybody to come to the 400 Club Rooftop Talk. You have me, myself, Yay 400. You have my boy Farmer here, co-host. And then we have my boy David.
Mm-hmm.
You know, David, you told me something in the last room that was quite interesting. How did you get your last name again, Jay?
I was living in France at the time, and they changed the law so that men could take their wives' last name. So I walked into the police department where you get that, where you have your IDs issued. And I went in and I said, hey, I want to take my wife's last name. And all these guys looked at me like, what do you want to do? And just for that face, it was worth it.
Oh, my God. That was something I never heard of that there before. You know, over here, we have frown upon that. But women will be, oh, man, they will love that. They'll be like, yes, woman power at this point. So
why do you think I did it?
Oh, wow. For the woman? Okay, David's
yeah, yeah.
So listen, I want to welcome back everybody to the 400 Club Rooftop Talk podcast. It's an audio podcast where the conversation goes deeper than the surface level, and we challenge perspective that most people are too uncomfortable. Well, most people are too comfortable to question. Let's put it like that. I'm your host, J400, and today we have a very interesting guest stepping into the room. We are joined by David Dearton, a conceptual artist whose work explores political polarization, social fracture. Look, political polarization. I hear that one, David. Social fractures and what happens when a human connection starts to break down and operates in a space that most avoid. We are where art meets discomfort and where ideas challenge identity. And that is something that David specializes in. This is going to be one of those conversations, David. David, you can give us a brief summarization of who you are and the things that you've done, the work you have done at the same time. So go ahead. It's all on you, David.
Well, just, you know, beyond the fact that I took my wife's last name, that should say a lot right there. Now, I'm all about experimenting stuff, breaking taboos when necessary to kind of further an artistic cause. But I believe that we are all political beings, and at any moment we can act when necessary as citizens. And that it takes place when we talk to strangers, when we talk to one another, we listen to one another and try to figure out where the other person's from, where they're at, and create bridges that way. And I just love talking to people that have very different views from me. And try to create bridges with them. So that's what I do, and I use art installations and travel to different countries and apply just that. And here we are.
All right. Okay. For people who may not know who you are, where do you come from?
Okay. So,
what is your background? Any religious? Anything religious or?
Oh, religious. I've tried. Okay. So religious. That's a good one. Yeah. So I was just, so I wanted to go all spiritual and with you and stuff. I see myself as a part of a greater creation. Sure. I was raised as a Roman Catholic in France, became a Buddhist in my early 20s. And I think that's where I still am, but I don't really see Buddhism as a religion, more as a philosophy. I go to church, but I don't go to church to pray. I go to church to talk to different people and have interactions with them. I go to a lot of different. I go to synagogue. Been to mosque recently when I was in Morocco.
So you don't have you don't really have a steady religion. You just a way of life. That's what you're basically saying.
Oh, you got it. Thank you. Make it simple for me.
Okay, so this is the thing, right?
I like how it just went around the answer around. You got it straight. That's good.
No, I get what you're saying, because a lot of us don't, you know, subscribe to religion and stuff like that, because you know how tainted it has been, how watered down it's been. It's a confusion. So people most of the time say, hey, you know, I'm just going to be a good person. That's it. So religion can be exhausting for most people. You describe yourself as a conceptual artist testing the margins of societal broken bonds. That's a powerful phrase, David. What does that actually look like in practice?
It looks like something like I'll go to a national park. I will set up in a free speech area. You know, usually where you go to a national park, you got people, you know, Jehovah Witnesses and stuff like that. They want you to come and join their church. They're in a special area, right? Mm-hmm. And that's actually designated by the administration of like where they should be. I take that space. I install a piece of artwork in there, and people walk by and go, oh, what's that, you know? And they come on over and I ask them what they think that is. And we start usually a conversation. And it's always around, I take the taboo subject of politics as my central focal point for the last 6 years. Because there's a big divide in this country, and people are getting some pretty big arguments. There's relationships being broken and stuff.
Yes.
I want to be there to show different ways, experiment, find ways where people can reconnect and bridge, you know, ultimately with people that they broke up with because they're family members and stuff that have very different views, and kind of bring down the tension on the hatred and the anger to find a place where we can connect. I mean, I hear some crazy stuff. So there's method to it for sure.
You gotta think about this, David. besides people, you mentioned something about how families are, how families don't really connect and things like that. But I think it's a bigger issue at hand at this point. We talked about, I had a room yesterday about how social media and how it basically interferes with critical thinking, right? Mm-hmm. And so at this point, whatever you look at on social media, whatever is in your algorithm, you will go with that instead of sitting there thinking about, hey, does this make sense? And challenging things so they won't be that person that is running with the herd, that herd mentality. You know what I'm saying? So I think that has a lot to do with that. I think politicians, the government has a lot to do why families and relationships fall apart. I think a lot of these big companies that these social media companies that put out this rhetoric, this distorted way of how relationships should run. I think that has all to do of what happens with relationships. So you gave it just your submission on that. I appreciate that. What drew you into focusing on political polarization and division specifically, David? What was there a moment or experience that pushed you to that direction?
Oh, I'm going to go way back. Right? For me, it's like nothing new, right? I'm living in France as a kid. The Eastern Europe is communist. There's the Western Europe is capitalist, if you want. You're listening to the radio. A lot of stuff happened on AM radio at the time. I could listen into the political radio of the Soviet Union. And then I can listen to the American stuff on Voice of America. So it's Voice of America versus TASS. They're talking about the same thing, but they're talking about it very differently. They're using different facts and opinions. They're trying to stoke some fear, some rage against the other party, right? So I've been hearing that, always fascinated, like, okay, I got to go see this, right? So like I'm 17, I go and I take the train and I go over to Eastern Europe under communist rule and go check it out for myself, you know? And my life has always been like, okay, let's go see what the other side has to say and see if this narrative that's being pushed upon us, is it real? And what you're going to find is always that the people are real, right? Mm-hmm. It's the message that is all manufactured, getting people just to create fear and outrage. And you had that talk just the other day or yesterday about being on social media devices. And that does exactly that. That's meant to create rage and division. And so to me, it's like, you got to do it in person, but that's uncomfortable, right? That's a lot more comfortable going on some digital device and writing whatever you want and spewing out what you want, because you're not going to get hit back just with words, and you can do whatever you want. You can be unfiltered if you want. But in person, it's a very different deal. You're looking at the person. There's all the different senses involved, right? Not just the visual. There's the tactile. There's the smell and all that. And you're looking at the other person, and it's real, right? And that's where it's happening. But, of course, that's not where our digital devices are taking us. They're entertaining us and taking us away from that contact. And anyway, where do you meet people that are different from ourselves? You know, you got to go. You got to move. You got to get into that space. And there's a lot of obstacles to it. And there's fewer of them than there used to be.
You gotta socialize.
Yeah.
You gotta move around. Right. You just can't sit mm-hmm. there and stay in your own, where you're used to being with the same people, same family. You gotta move around. I don't think people are even ready for that, because some people think that they're really social creatures when indeed they're just used to the people that they're around, socializing mm-hmm. with those people. So you really live in a fishbowl. So this is what I want to talk about. Art as a tool versus art as an expression. A lot of people see art as an expression, but your work feels more like a confrontation, David. Would you say your goal is to express yourself or to challenge other people?
Okay, my goal is like on a third thing. It's like, bring it in. I'm like the blank canvas, right? Just imagine this canvas that hasn't been painted on. I'm that. And then I get the public to paint on me, right? So I'll go out there. I will meet the public in areas which are unexpected. Like I was talking about going to a national park. I'll go into a national park and I'll be there where people don't expect me to be. And I will talk to them and they will tell me what they have on their minds. And I will just listen in and let it roll. I hear a lot of offensive stuff and I try not to get triggered. Right, I've been doing this for 6 years. I got triggered so much on the first year. It was like really hard to calm down. I was always waiting, like, what am I going to say next? Right, what am I going to say to this offense? Right.
Very true.
Yeah. So, and now it's like, okay, I got to listen in a little bit more, find out where they're at, why? Because if I don't, what else are we going to do? I mean, things are getting really heated up here. People are getting up some crazy ideas, voting for some crazy stuff. As far as I'm concerned. And it's in dialogue that we can bring down the tension, not change necessarily people's mind, but see the humanity in others. That's mm-hmm. what I mean, Matt. So
well,
we
that's
can see
be,
the humanity in
very
others.
Hard. a very hard pitch to get right there. That line right there alone, that statement alone, like, you know, that's going to be, woo.
Well, what do we do? What do we do? I mean, what can we do? This is what I know how to do. This is what I can do. Like, I can bring, so I do what I can do. I mean, some people, you know, they're a politician or whatever, or other people canvas and go door to door, talk to their community members, go to church and stuff like that. So this is what I know how to do. So I go and I meet hundreds and hundreds of people and interact with them and share ways where they can talk to their political enemies, if you like. And give them tools. Wow. Yeah. Their opponents, right? Who they perceive as being their enemies. Because when you start the conversation going, you realize, well, oh, you know what? 90% of that is bullshit, but there was that 10% right there. I'll work with that and create a bridge and a link with that, right? So that later on, they got a story, right? They met me and they found, oh, that crazy liberal or whatever, he's not... they're not all bloodthirsty, whatever they think, you know, libtards that they think we are. So they got a story, right? They got this connection. Yeah.
That's so my thing is, when we talk about art, we talk about all things that connect, that is associated with art, right? Mm. So my thing is this. Do you believe that art has a responsibility to society? Or should it remain neutral?
No. Yeah, there's no way. There's no way any art can be neutral. Like, so when you're experiencing it, you know, when you see it, when you feel it, when you touch it, when you eat it, like you go into a really good restaurant, and that's kind of an art form in itself, right? All of that, it touches you, it nourishes you, it repulses you, it does all these things. So it does have an effect. There's no way, and I see us all as political animals. There's no escaping that. Everything that we act, we vote, we don't vote, we pay taxes, we don't, we buy gas at the pump, whatever we do, we walk on the ground, all those things, even in our death, right? That action has a political effect. It has repercussions for the society wider at large. So, and I also see that all our actions, everything that we do as with intention, like in, not just passively, like with intent, that's right. An artistic expression. So I see us like right now, I see us doing some an art performance right here. We're creating stuff, right?
I was going to say that when I asked that question to you earlier. Like, basically, this is an art, us bridging the gaps between two different worlds, two different people, and we're trying to make something of it so everybody can really understand each other. But to me, to really understand someone, you have to understand their culture. You have to understand their traditions and things like that. And people don't take the time out to listen to try to study those things. And then when you see certain things happening, like, well, okay, that's uncomfortable to me, that's foreign to me, so that's wrong. Okay, so my next thing is going to be this: when people engage with your work, David, what reaction are you actually looking for? Is it awareness? I know you said you ain't looking for change, but I really think if you're looking for change, is it change or discomfort? What do you actually look for?
Man, the two things go together, right? I mean, there's got to be this element of discomfort for a change to happen, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So you nailed it, putting those things together. It's like hard to say that it wouldn't be. So I don't want people to feel uncomfortable, but it has to be an inner, like inside of them, that form of discomfort, because you're challenging the way things should appear. For example, when we're talking about politics, people think, oh, we got to have an argument. But here I am listening in to everything the other person's saying until they kind of like wasted everything they had to say, right? Because there's nothing like, there's no return on what they were expecting. So that creates the discomfort. And in that discomfort, I see people go, oh, wait a second, I can have a conversation. What does this guy think? Right. And then we're starting to have a dialogue. But first, people got to say what they have to say.
You feel that discomfort opens up for dialogue, even if it's negative or positive, it opens for dialogue. So that's why you look for discomfort. Go ahead. I hear you.
Yeah. And it could be a discomfort, for example, in silence. Right. So here I am. I always ask the same three political questions to people for the last 6 years. They're always the same three. And I'm just listening in. And as they finish, there's this long silence, and that's a discomfort, right? They're like, well, what now? Now what? So then I just ask my desk question. And in that process right there, people also, after the discomfort, they feel, oh, there's no threat in this, right? I can say what I need to say. I don't need to get angry about it. And I'm going to express myself. And I'm doing a few things. I'm like recording their voices like in an interview, right? I have a mic. Right, I have this gimmick, if you want. It doesn't even need to be on. It's like people see the mic and they're like, okay, all right, this is what it happens. I say what I need to do, what I need to say, not maybe to David, but to the mic, right? And they feel a certain amount of comfort, right? And I'll do things. I'll bring an art installation out, like a sculpture or something that's unusual. And that's where the dialogue takes place. It's like two people have different views. They're sat at a table and they have two different, they're on the opposite side of the table, each in different chairs. And if they have the table, they feel more comfortable. You take out the table, and then there's a sense of discomfort because there's no longer that barrier, right? So we kind of need a barrier when we have these conversations. And they could be in the form of giving people their space, where it's going to be, what space is it going to be in, right? A busy street corner might not be the best place. When they're kind of, coffee shop might be, when you're waiting in line with somebody, are they receptive? All these different little cues about communication. Those allow us certain spaces where we can interact with strangers and make them comfortable enough so that they will say what they need to say. I mean, I'm not looking for, I'm not looking for confrontation. On the contrary, I want to show that we can have these talks without confrontation. But for that, first, people have to be in the right space.
I mean, like, I think debates always open up for things like that. You never know which way it's going to go. You don't know who you're dealing with on the other side. It can seem calm on the surface, but inside they could be full of turmoil. So at that point in time when they're having that conversation, they really like to just express everything that they've been going through in the past, and they bring it up, and it makes a really bad conversation and environment for those people to try to even thrive into converse it, if that makes sense to you. Let's talk about the bigger issue here. David,
oh boy,
talk about
what's that?
So I want to talk about polarization in human behavior, political polarization. From your perspective, and people are people becoming more divided or just honest about where they stand? If you think about all these politicians that don't really speak the regular rhetoric, the verbiage, and they just really just come out and say how they feel. Do you think that that's a, do you, you know what, answer the first question, but I'm thinking, do you feel though that they just really being honest, more honest about where they stand?
So I find that the division is greater and it's getting wider. People are really sticking to their camp, if you want. It's me against them, right? There's very much this them thing, right? And that confrontation will take place, and the shit will hit the fan, and we just got to let it happen. For the sake of my kid, I don't want that to be her future. I know there's other ways to be able to attain that. That's why I'm involved in this. Bridging is called a bridging movement, if you want, creating bridges. But there is a definite political need for division in order to get the votes these days. And that works really well. Being in the center doesn't, because it doesn't, you know, we have a very short attention span. The center is going to have to explain us stuff. But if you're going to go for the extremes, it's like, oh, that sound bite sounds really good. I'm going to go with that. And that right there is, that's one of the issues. You know, we're not spending time to listen. We're just spending time to react, you know, one thing after another, because it dopes us.
So for the record, you think that people are becoming divided, but it's in a conducive way where society is trying to go, and not just more about thinking that, you know, feeling where they're being honest about where they stand, for the record.
I don't think that we spend the time to think about where we're at personally, because we're being bombarded with so much stuff over and over that we don't have time for that. And it's not just that. We got bills to pay and everything. You know, we got things to do. We're so busy like paying off all the stuff we consume that we don't have time to like sit back and read an article or get informed or go to that political rally and hear what that politician has to say. We just got to take that soundbite and go with it. So usually it ends up with some ad or whatever, and it's got to like really kind of hit us more than all the rest. How can it hit us more than all the rest, except that if it's an outrageous claim that really like gets us fired up? You know, there's like there's no room for reason anymore, although we think we have that, but we are bombarded all the time with advertisement, publicity, with messaging, all this stuff online nonstop. How do we take that down?
That goes to the next thing. You talk about the bombarding of social media, the media, all these things that we're like, we're really like having a hard time to really go to like a city council meeting or anything that's really important for us to attend. So do you think that social media amplifies the division or expose what's already there?
Okay, I'm gonna share something I did 7 years ago. I did this art experiment. It's a conceptual art piece. I went on Instagram. I wasn't on Instagram before. I joined Instagram and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Every day I'm going to post a video and it's going to be an abstract video and it's going to be about political polarization. And I'm going to talk about this philosophical story by Plato, this old Greek philosopher from 2,500 years ago, about Plato's allegory of the cave. And I'm going to explain it bit by bit. And every day I'm going to put something up. So here I go, and I'm putting this stuff up, and I'm trying to reach other people, and I'm putting it out, and it's political, and the algorithm doesn't like you to talk about politics the way I was doing it. So I get shadow banned. That means my site gets, my profile gets closed down. I have no more access to it. It happened half a dozen times.
Yeah, you got it.
Oh yeah, that was just crazy. So I did that and it pulled me. It pulled me. It's like, oh, I want those likes, I want those hearts, and I want all that stuff, right? I'm getting pulled into it. You know, I want followers, you know. So I'm starting to get all these followers of all the, but I don't want just, you know, thousands of artists. I want there to be, you know, firemen, nurses, educators, all these people, anybody, salespeople, all that to be on there too. So I start reaching out across there, and the algorithm doesn't like that either, so it bans you and it shuts you down. Like, there's no space on social media to actually, it's not made for us to go connect to people outside of our group or whatever it thinks our group is. You know, we can look at some videos and stuff and it can turn our interests in certain direction, but that's your box. That's where you got to stay, in that box. None of us want to be in a box, right? But that's what it does, and it does it so well through entertaining and outrage and appeal that we get distanced so much, and we spend so much time on it. I want to argue, how much time do we spend on our phones versus the time that we actually speak to people in person from the heart, not just, you know, business stuff like taking orders at a restaurant. I'm talking about like having that something, a deepened conversation. I don't know. Last night I got to, with my wife, we went to go see Cornel West, Dr. Cornel West from Princeton. He was talking here in our town. He was saying just that. I'm kind of just repeating what he said. His lesson that last night was like, how much time do you spend, right, talking to other people, and especially the stranger, the person that you do not know. Yeah, not just to repeat the stuff that you already know with people in your side of your own group, to go outside and do that. That's a political act. That's something that we can all do, right? And we don't have to wait till it's time to vote. We can be the advocate. We can be the activist. We can be out there connecting with others. And regardless how small that is, that's a really powerful tool that we all have at our disposal, and that the social media platforms do not want us to do, because they want our attentions on that screen as long as possible so they can put some ads in front of our eyeballs, right?
And I think that's working pretty well for them.
And you know it, but it's so good, opinion, we want more.
In your opinion,
yeah,
what is the real root that these broken bonds in society? Is it ego? Do you think it's ideology? Do you think it's lack of communication? You actually, or something deeper, but actually, you literally just spoke on that just now. You literally just spoke on just going out there, communicating, and, you know, sharing ideas and all those things like that. But we can't do it if we have social media there, and those people that plan to have us hooked on these phones and things like that, they are at this point achieving the agenda that they set forth. I'm going to let you answer that question. Is it your opinion that this is not, that this is real, the real root of these broken bonds is society? I'll let you just answer that.
I don't think that we have the bonds are broken. I think they're dormant. I think that we know that as people, strong. As individuals.
That's a good statement. That's strong.
Yeah. As individuals, we're there. We know what to do when it happens. We just need practice. We haven't done it enough. We're like kids about this.
Reminding.
The two kind of go together, right? If we're gonna do through the practice, we can refigure how our connections are in our brain and in also in the connections that we have with others. But it takes practice, and from that practice, you got to go through pain. Because it's painful to go talk to other people, in the sense you're going to be exposed, right? You got to be honest about it. And if you're listening in, there's an element of pain. You're going to get triggered by some of the things that they say. You want to respond and say what you want to have to say. But that's the time when you actually, good time to be quiet, listen in, and be there for the other.
Well, David, when I say reminded, right, I think about this. I think of the times when I was growing up. Myself, I'm 43 years old. I don't know how far you are from me. How old are you, David?
I'm 57.
Okay, so you came up in the era where we had the rotary phones and the beepers, and you came up in the era where we went outside and actually connected with people that were in our community, in our neighborhood. We went out there, we played basketball, whatever you did, you did it in the community. Yeah. And at this point, the children, because I have three of my own, like I said, I'm a single pops, and they want to be hooked. They are hooked to their devices. And their video games, and they do less interaction with people in the community. And so what I did was I got off my high horse and said, listen, you know, I think I'm doing a good job, but at the same time, I could be doing better as a pops. I think I need to go out there. I put one in camp like I did when I was younger. The other one, he goes, he cooks and he sells food and stuff to other people. And then I let the other one go to their friend house. And they, you know, now they're out there doing what they're supposed to do. So when I say reminding the people that were never there in the beginning to know what it was without having these devices and this constant distraction, they don't know what it is. So we have to remind them by reminding ourselves and keeping in practice with them. And that's where I was coming from with that, David. So I do have another way here. Do you believe society can actually come back together, or are we moving towards a more permanent fragmentation?
I think we can come together. Yeah. Oh yeah. We can do it. I think it's certainly as what is what we're doing right now with your listeners is being there, listening in, right? That those type of moments, being present in that moment. That's where those things can happen. And not to worry constantly like, oh, they got the bigger powers are going to shut us down or whatever. You know, just to practice, to do the things that you did with your kids. Like, we're addicted to our phones over here. So you know what we got at night? We got a box. And all our phones go in the box. And it's not just any shoe box. It's a box that has a lock on it, and it doesn't come with a key. It's a timer. You put the phones in there, and you just turn this dial and say, I want this thing closed for 8 hours. And you cannot access your phones for 8 hours. You have to break it with a hammer. And that's the only way to open the damn thing, right? So, you know, we got to find mechanisms and engage our kids, you know, take the things away, finding ways to do so and incentives for them not to be on their phones for as much as possible so that we can find that equilibrium again, where more time is spent in person than on digital devices, because it's so much easier on the devices. Right. But we're losing our kids when we do that. Mm-hmm. But I think
that's true.
The knowledge is there. The science is there, right? We know what it does. Now we do. And it's starting to be taught in schools digital education or something like that. They got a name for it. And there's all these things that are available. It's just a question of the practice. And that's each one of us to take the courage to act in small little ways like that. That's how it's going to happen.
Got you. On this platform, David, I want to jump into the segment of relationship and culture. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I take a breath when I say relationships here, because here on this platform, we talk about a lot about relationship, not just romantic, but human connections overall. So how do you think these societies, these societal divisions are affecting everyday relationships between people?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the thing. I'm not always in the United States. Just this year, I was in Colombia. I was in France. I was in North Africa, in Morocco, as well as Mexico in the last 4 months here. And one thing I notice every time is I come back, when I go to these places, people are more connected, not connected to their phones, but to others. When they're talking to people in the street, in their communities, they're chatting with one another. It's a very different experience than the one I'm living. I live in the Western U.S. So I'm kind of outside of town. People are stuck in their cars. They don't talk to one another very much. They're listening to the radio, and then they're on their phones, and then they're on their computers and stuff. But like in a place like Morocco, you know, I take some hitchhikers. We talk in the coffee shop. I meet people. We go for walks. They take me to their fields. We have a much more in-depth relationship, although it's not one of direct communication, because I don't speak Arabic or Darija, which is the language they speak in southern Morocco near the Sahara. I don't speak those languages, but we look at each other like deep in the eye, right? We might even hold hands when we're going for a walk, which is kind of awkward. Talk about discomfort.
Right.
You hold hands. Yeah. You hold hands over in my town. That means a whole other thing. You know, like over there, it's like, oh, I like you. Let's go hold hands and walk down the river. Like, okay.
That does show the disconnection between people, because, you know, even if I'm walking down the street, my buddy, put my arms around his shoulder and stuff like that, we laugh and we talk, and they're going to say, oh, what are you guys, your lovers, boy lovers, or some shit like that? You know what I mean? Like the disconnect is there.
You get shit for it, right? That's different. Right.
Let me ask you this question. Are people becoming less willing to understand each other and more focused on being right? Because even when you gave your explanation of you being out of the country and you've seen how things are there, people will have this conversation that never been, that's not as well traveled as yourself, and try to challenge you and try to be right when they have never had the experience. It's crazy. So do you think that people are becoming less willing to understand each other and are more focused on being right?
Hey, you know what? Yes, because when you're online, right, all you're doing is consuming stuff. You don't have a space to say what you need to say, right? Mm. You can put out a message, but you're not getting, you know, you write something down. It doesn't mean that you're having that connection. You're not getting as many hits and likes that you want or whatever. So there's a disconnect, and that disconnect is growing, right, with time, right? When we're under devices, right? But when we're doing it in person, we can have that. We can reconnect. There's an emotional link that takes place, and that's something we need to explore more and more. I mean, we all know this, right? We all know it deep in our hearts. That's what we need to do. We just don't want to because it's an effort. It takes time. You know, we want to do other stuff. You're in a waiting room with 10 people for a medical appointment or something, and everybody's on their phone. It's like, well, you don't want to interrupt them, but that's a good time to do it, actually. Go interrupt them. People want to. That's my experience. They want to be interrupted. But the thing is that they want to say what they need to say. So we're coming to a point where somebody's going to have to do the listening just to get the conversation going, right? And some people just go on and on and on. I get it. Right. And it's okay to interrupt other people and to say what you have to say. But at first, somebody's got to do the listening. And I'm going to argue that's got to be you. It's got to be me. It's got to be one of your listeners. One of us has got to start and make that. It's like an act of kindness for others. Just think of it that way. It's something like, you know, given to others. And we can give them that time and space for them to have an actual human listening to them. Right.
Right.
Hopefully, and ask them something worthwhile. If they're just going to talk about what happened during their day, well, okay, that's all right. We're making some connection. Make it worthwhile. Ask them, like, you know, these are the three questions I use. The first one is, these are the political questions. I go straight to politics. Like, oh, you know, that's all really interesting hearing about, you know, what you ate at McDonald's or whatever. But here's another one. You know, how would you describe the political system of the United States of America? And they'll be like, what? I was like, yeah, no, I want to know, like, how would you describe the political system of the United States of America? And then they'll say, blah, 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 whatever they need to say, you know?
Right.
And listen into that. Make the conversations worthwhile. Make them on subjects that actually can bridge us together and that make a political change, right? Yeah.
So here's the thing, David. What role does identity play in all of this? Because it seems like people are attaching themselves to the idea in a way that makes disagreement feel so fucking, freaking personal. And so what do you think identity plays in all of this?
Right. So I'm going to go back to last night's talk from Cornell West, which I just really, really enjoyed. It was packed. Got to say, when he shows up, you know, he's a professor of philosophy, first African American to graduate with a PhD in philosophy from Princeton in 1973. The house was packed, and actually the whole college was packed with all the cafeteria was packed. They were looking at it on the screen. It was great. But the thing that he brought forward is that it's about being there for others, right? As a political act, right? Of being present when it needs to be, to bring your sense of morality in a path of validation, right? And that means that you can be wrong, right? Because you're constantly evolving and changing. And to listen to someone else, you might find some, not only connection, but also some emotional links that might take you to a new space. And that's where change evolves, not just through discomfort, but through that exchange. And that's one of the elements that we're missing right now, because we don't want to feel uncomfortable. I hope that makes some sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish Cornell West was here. He'd explain it a lot better.
Well, maybe we can probably get him in. Maybe one day, you know what I'm saying, you can have a conversation with Cornell and we can get him in here.
He probably would. He'd love it. I think
I would bring you guys up a little later on if he wants to do a Q&A later on. But right now, I want to run through my segments with him. We're here today is David Dierton with Yay 400 from the 400 Club Rooftop Talk. Can I get a bip, 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 bear? That was the wrong one. Let me just do this one. And so you up there, up top right there in that link, is the 400 Club Rooftop Talk podcast. It's the audio podcast, which I literally just started probably a month ago. And this is where you will hear this this podcast episode with David and myself. Go up there, become a subscriber. Yes, I have different types of genres that I touch, relationship, economics. I touch everything under the sun I'm trying to touch. I just want to show people how versatile you can be and still touch the hearts of the people. So another thing is, all right, you answered that question. So this is where we're going to go into. That's the reason. This is the reason why I asked you, what role does identity play in all this? Okay, so I want to do the role of individual. Let's break down the individual level. What can a person actually do to bridge? This is your thing, David. Gaps in their own lives, whether it's with friends, family, or even strangers.
Right. We all have different ways of doing it. Now, once again, as an artist, I'm going to use my own ways, right? Like I was talking about using art installations, talking to people, interviewing them or whatever. But the one thing, right, that we all have are stories, right? So just right now, the listeners are hearing our conversation, right? That creates a story. That's a story that we can take in our everyday lives to say, hey, you know what? I listened to the show right now today on the radio, and they were talking about political polarization or whatever. And there's methods to do so, right? How do you connect? You know, you ask people questions, right? You got to ask them questions. You know, how do you connect with people that have different political views than yourselves? I know I'm always going to go back to politics. I know it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things we're not supposed to talk about. We're not supposed to talk about religion.
Politics or religion.
I'm going to go for those. I'm going to always go for those. Those are the ones that you're going to connect fast.
David's a scary thing. When you're trying to connect with the wrong person you think they're the right person at the right time, but the wrong person. That's one of the scariest conversations. So go ahead, you got it.
Yeah. But, yeah, but the deal is. The people can say whatever they want. You know, they'll let them. Let them say whatever racist dumbass thing they gotta say. Let them say it. The deal is what you're gonna do during that time. You're gonna get triggered, right?
Right.
You're gonna get triggered during that time. So I've been dealing with like how not to get triggered, and why would I let somebody say what they have to say? At some point, they're gonna get tired of it, right? And they're gonna get this story. They're like, wait a second. I just spoke like an asshole for 10 minutes to this guy, and he didn't even like flinch. And what I wanted for him to flinch because I was trying to
trigger something.
Yeah, trigger something, but it didn't work, right? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, what's going on? they want to know what's going on. What's the matter with you? It's like, I'm just listening to you, right? I want to hear what you have to say. And but they might say,
you're talking about dealing with strangers and stuff like that too. Do you think the same tactic could be used for family and friends?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's ultimately where you want to go. It's so much easier, actually. You got no skin in the game. You're talking to some stranger. You know, if they're just listening, they're not going to get upset. They're going to say what they have to say. They might move on. But with your family member, right?
Right.
If you got some form of disagreement, you got some skin in the game. You got to be there. Right. So the point, if you're not listening in 100%, not thinking about what you got to say afterwards, just listening, giving the person the time to say what they have to say, you're going to learn something. And I'm not. And here's the deal. This is how I don't get triggered. People are going to say all this crazy stuff. Right.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm not going to focus on the facts or their opinions about stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm listening for an emotion.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. The emotion, like they're angry or frustrated, right? Or whatever that is, I'm going to go with that. Because if that's something that I feel as well, I could say, you know what? I'm frustrated too. I'm confused too. Right? I'm angry too. That's something we have in common.
You're trying to connect to them on an energetic level.
That's it. That's the only one we could do.
You're not saying, okay, you're not listening to what they're saying. You're actually listening for the emotion behind what they're saying. So if it resonates to you, you know how to respond to it. If it just makes them really angry, you can basically give them time to breathe. I get what you're saying right now. Hopefully I'm coming across the right way. I don't know if it's...
No, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. I'm going to look for an emotion. That's the bridge. All the rest, that's the triggers. Good chance they could be triggers. Right? Oh, you're like, oh, I know that's not right. I know that's, I'm not to correct that. They said that this, and this. I know that's not right. I've read something else. I'm going to tell them, hey, don't tell them. Tell them that you agree with, that you disagree with the rest, but you agree with a certain thing. And that's got to be an emotion. And that there's nothing that you can dispute about that. When I'm in North Africa or whatever, that emotion is true. I don't know much about their culture or whatever, but if it's about happiness or beauty or whatever, that's where I'm going to connect with that. And then you get like this deep look in the eye where you connect with the other person and they're like, oh, okay, you got me.
So David, you do believe this gap being bridged is more about listening more, speaking differently, or challenging your own beliefs?
Oh, all of those, for sure. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. You got to be ready to be challenged. Right.
Yes.
But definitely. The thing is, are you going to be triggered?
Right.
Yeah.
That's the disconnect with people. Like at this point, I think people have become really, really odd. I don't want to say that word because then women get offended. I think they become really sensitive to things. When it's only supposed to be a conversation. Back in the days, I remember people would say certain things to people and it can be vulgar and they don't get an offense to it. They just take the message behind it. So I want to talk about controversy and the pushback, right? When you deal with the topic like division and polarization, I know you have had to face some pushback. But what's been the most common criticism of your work?
Oh, that it's not effective. Right? It's not effective enough. Yeah, we got much bigger problems. We shouldn't be talking to some Nazi or whatever, right? We shouldn't give them the space to be able to say anything, right? And in some way, I'm like, yeah, probably, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be talking to this person or giving them this any space. I'm not going to promote what they're saying. I'm not going to agree with what they're saying. I'm actually going to take a chance to say that I disagree with what they're saying, right? And I'm not going to tell them why until they ask me why. And it doesn't matter because I'm not going to change the way people think about a political event on the spot, but I'm going to get them thinking about it. And I'm going to get them thinking also of the interaction that we had, right? This actually happened. And I'm going to tell them that if I hear something
It sounds like you're about to go into my next question, David.
How
do you handle people completely that reject your message? Who rejects your message?
They got to agree to talk to me. So if they're a bit angry or whatever, they might. Yeah. But usually because they got something to say, right? So if I'm only listening, what's there to be angry about?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I'm just listening and that's all I'm doing, right? I'm asking questions and I'm listening. I've had hundreds and hundreds of encounters. I've never had an argument with any of them. Nobody getting mad except if it was in the wrong place. You know, like I tried to ask political questions like on the streets in New York when people are going to work. That is not a good time to do that. You know, people are busy. It's like, get the F out of here.
Read the room.
Yeah, exactly. Read the room. So that's why I go to like a place where these things happen. That's why I was talking about. I go to national parks. That's my thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because people are all happy. They're at the park. I can go to a public park. That's also a good space. You know, people are relaxed. You know, they're having a good time or whatever. And that's a good place to connect. And to meet new people and to have these type of conversations. I am coming forth and saying, I'm going to, you know, I like to talk about politics. You know, and people usually say, well, that, you know, oh, then you're looking for trouble. And I was like, well, no, not really. You know, I'm not looking for trouble, but can I ask you a few questions? And they're like, well, give it a go. And I said, they're non-confrontational. And they're like, how can that be? Politics is always confrontational.
Not all the time.
Yeah, I don't think so. Because when you just listen, there's no conflict there, right?
Right.
That's and people just giving their opinion.
You know what I mean? It's the way they're giving it how they feel. So this is my final thoughts on impact, right? So at the end of the day, what do you want people to walk away with when they experience your work? After they experience your work, what do you want them to walk away with?
A thought, right? To think about it, that the process is in motion. This is how it goes. I'll run you through it. People, if I have this conversation coming and I'm recording their voices, or they've experienced one of my art installations, and I've asked them my three non-confrontational political questions, and I'm going to share them right now so you know what they are. So okay. How would you describe the political system of the United States of America?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that could be how would you describe the political system of France, of Canada, or whatever wherever I am. Right, I could change that country.
Okay. Tomorrow. All right, I got you.
Yeah, but that's one. And then the second one, it's on an emotional level. So then I'll ask him, describe your feelings or reactions to the current state of U.S. politics. And then they either go on and they say what they have to say, right? And then the third question is kind of a game where you finish the sentence. And I say, politics in the United States, then it's blank, and then they fill in the rest, right? People are really happy that you get to, you know, they get to say what they have to say on the subject, and they're being listened to and heard. That's great. Yeah. And then I ask them one final question.
What's that?
And I ask them to find one word that kind of brings everything together, the one they want to broadcast out there, the one they want to put out there. And that's a really hard one. One word,
scam.
Right?
Scam. That's
yeah, scam. Yeah, you can say scam, right? You can say scam, right?
Yes.
Okay,
scam.
Here's the deal, right? So you meet me and you said the word scam, and this is what usually happens, right? Somebody goes off for a walk, they come back a little bit later and they say, hey, David, you know what? You know, I said scam, but you know, it's been a couple hours and now I was thinking the word is this other word, right? The other word is like hope or democracy or whatever, right? The word is constantly changing, but you're thinking about it and you're preparing yourself for that.
My word will come from scam, then I would go straight off of that. I would say deception. Oh, deception. Lie.
Yeah.
All those type of things, because that's what, you know, I've been in that realm and I've done a lot of rooms. I have been a part of a lot of debates when it comes down to the political of side of the field. And it's just a lot of things that I just don't agree with. Then I find out who these people that own and pay into these politicians. Like, it's just it's just so much. So that, I'm sorry to cut. I'm sorry to jump in there, but that's how I will feel. So this is what I want to say to you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
If someone is listening right now, this very moment, David, they feel disconnected from society, from people, or even themselves, what would you say to them?
Well, that sounds kind of like a Marxist thing to say, right? This like disconnect and stuff. And Marx would call it like alienation. Feeling alienated.
You picked it what I was saying, David.
And I'm going to become a Marxist right now. I'm going to agree that it has much to do with the modes of consumption, right? And how everything around us is all set up to consume more, to work for that consumption, for these goods and all this stuff, to apply a lot of our time into that activity versus having maybe in-depth relationships and connections with other people, right? We're going to accumulate stuff. And I think that has a lot to do with our disconnect in society, because a lot of the consumption items that we have are things that divide us, right? We aim for a car. Okay, we put our buddies in the car. Fine. Okay, we got that. We got a friend's family. We can take them around. But that's time that is spent away from groups of people, right? Mm-hmm. And encounters that happen, right? Yeah, this, and also, yes, of course, there's the forces that are, right? May they be a corporate
Can't
or political.
That.
Yeah, they're doing their thing, right?
Yeah,
and they got us right where they want us,
right?
And so, right, we can decide. Well, you know what? I'm going to take a step back, and I'm going to take 10 minutes out of that narrative, and make it my own.
And that's
all I'm aiming for. Let's try to balance the narrative more in the favor of community and togetherness and sharing right? And that includes some of the worst, because we can't, that's kind of their narrative, right?
Right.
Load them up, put them in a, you know, put them in a gas chamber.
Well, guess what, David? I'm a black man. You're a white man, and we just bridged the gap just now. It would come down to the political views or even conspiracy theories. We still, you know, connect on that end. So that's bridging the gap, man, from two different cultures. This is what I usually do. Yes, this is a pay for, I understand. But what I usually do is offer a Q&A to you for the people that have been listening to you so far. If you want to, if you are open for that, because we've been here quite a while now. You know
I'd love
mean?
To. Bring
How long? I give you about, we can have about like 15 minutes, I guess, until 12 o'clock, and then we're in this this show. Rambo, did you want to say something to him? PhD, you can have the mic.
Indeed, peace to the space. Hold on, I'm over here working a little latte.
What's going on, brother?
Hold on, what's
I know that was you.
Hey, peace. pardon me. Hold on, shit. Let me cut this. I'm trying to make my little latte for the morning. Hold on, okay. So, first and foremost, peace to you, Ye. I mean, like, yo, I can't even say no words, but we're pressed for time, so I'm going to just get right into it. As I came in, first of all, the title caught my attention, Can't Creativity Heal a Broken Society? And I'm now learning who David Deighton is. I've already DM'd you on IG, so we can follow up. Okay. And we don't know each other. We never met before. And I want to tell you that my findings and your findings are the same. Mm. We come from two totally different backgrounds, two totally different experiences. You've traveled the world. I've traveled as well. Mm. I have a think tank that I started called Cognitive Agility. And the purpose of Cognitive Agility was, it was my response to the world that we live in today. Everyone's wondering how to navigate through this. And after great thought, years of experience engaging with humans in real life, ups and downs, so on and so forth, and having the gift that I have, I've concluded that those that embrace a cognitive agility will have the tools that they need to navigate this challenging world that we live in, politically, personally, et cetera, et cetera. I too agree with you that human to human connectivity in North America has been greatly compromised, right? The proverbial they will be, big companies that want people to buy their products to feel like they're human. That, you know, this narrative that in order for you to be respected by other humans, you must drive this, you must do that. And addiction is cured. Right? So what that does is it goes selfishness. It's high in being all of these things. And so just hearing you speak is an frequency I've experienced positive engagement on, because that's the truth, right? But when you engage with people who are not afraid to engage in truths and seek to have remedy, they seek to have a positive impact on other human beings, those are the people I fuck with, right? So I look forward to hearing you again. I look forward to following up with you. I have a movement. I just started publishing on Substack. And, you know, I need great minds such as yourself. I need a diverse collective of individuals that understand what you and I understand. And Ye too, of course. Ye is always welcome. Ye is the guy I call when it's popping, like, Ye, come on. That's it. And he could do the same to me. He could be like, Dupreme, come on. And I'm not going to ask no questions. I'm going to get on that plane. We're going to work it out. And we're going to be part of whatever movement we need to be on. So it was a pleasure speaking to you. It's 11:53. Out of respect for the time, for the time, I just wanted to introduce myself, acknowledge Ye, and you know, like I said, let's do this again. So thank you, Alan.
Beautiful, beautiful message, man. Thanks for sharing. I appreciate that. I do. Right, we all have different ways of doing this, and I like what you're doing.
Yeah, shout out to you, Ye. And it's nice to meet you, David. Listening to the interview, there was a couple things that jumped out to me because they definitely happened in my life as well, too. When you talked about traveling and seeing how different people engage, that was one of the things that I kind of started to realize as well once I started to travel to and do business in other countries, seeing the lack of engagement. I remember my father had passed away, and I moved to Europe. I was in Switzerland. I was in England, and I noticed that people were outside. I didn't see any tablets. I didn't see people on phones. Mm. It kind of like snapped me out of it. It made me realize how kind of weird America was, because like people were in the parks afternoon playing chess, playing ping pong, all types of stuff like that. And, like outside in Switzerland, people just sitting by the pond, and it's like it made me miss that, because that's what we used to do when we was younger. Mm. We'd be outside and engaging with one another's, and you kind of can tell like that's kind of what's been missing. And the other thing that I also liked that you brought up is also bringing creativity back into it, because you had said something about consuming. When you're consuming, you're not doing. All you're doing is listening and taking in information but not doing anything with it. And those were some of the big shares that I definitely liked that you brought up.
Mm. Yeah, may we be able to create that, what you saw in Switzerland, for example, more of that. And we have that within our power, but we're going to have to like invite our neighbors over and say, we're going to have a little, I don't know, share a sandwich or make a meal. Or they got this day in France that the government put together. It's the Day of the Neighbors. And what happens is that they invite people, the whole floor of an apartment building, to get together and share a meal. And it's like a major national thing now. People close off a part of their street, and they'll have a DJ, and they'll put on some music, and it becomes like quite a bit of a party now. And I think it's the 10th or around the 10th year of this, there's some real incredible community involvement. Because you know, involves some drinking and some good food, and people are having a blast, and they recreate that, and they're creating links. So we can do this, but somebody's gonna have to start it, and those things are painful, in the sense that we gotta spend time and effort. And hopefully you can do one of those, or maybe you're already doing something like that.
Definitely. In your community. And one other thing I wanted to share, maybe ask a question about. One thing I was talking about with one of my friends recently, she's big into bringing back third spaces. For those who don't know what third spaces are, those third spaces used to be like churches or like your community, like gym or whatever, those places where we just would naturally go to have these social engagements. Is that part of anything that you're doing, is bringing some of those back to normalcy, I guess?
Well, I would love it. As an artist, I'm more of an observer, if you want. I don't find it in my capacity to be able to build these spaces, but I can recognize how few spaces are available. I mean, you mentioned churches, the gym, whatever. But then when you were in Switzerland, there were people playing chess in the park and things like that. I see a lot of empty parks where I live. People are not using them. They're not investing themselves in these areas, because it's not a place that you walk to, and sometimes you got to take the bus or you got to take a car to get there. There's a question of how our whole system is set up. We live very far from one another in many, many cases. If we live in an apartment block, that's a great opportunity for making connections, because people are in proximity. There's an issue of proximity, and if we're missing that, then we got to bridge it. And how do you do that, right? So I would love to see more spaces where people can, without money, where they can hang out together and meet one another, and for there to be activities without having to dish out some money in order to do it. I mean, to go, people out here that go meet each other at a coffee shop, but you got to buy something. You know, why do you have to do that? Why couldn't it just be public spaces where we can meet one another?
Yeah, and
we need more of that.
And even as like an artist, do you ever do anything like have like a paint night at the house or like arts and craft night or something like that?
Man, those sound really good. You know, I try to do things like that, but people are never like jumping on board. So you got to go with like, that's why I go to national parks where people already are at, right? Where they already are there, right? And then try to organize people to come over to my place. I mean, I invite the entire neighborhood to over to our house once a year. Been doing it for 6 years. People show up. I've never been invited back, but they love to come to my place. So I'll take that as a win because they showed up. And so by example, just keep on going at it. Somebody's got to do it. And somebody's got to make the effort and some of the expense to feed people. Potlucks are better.
Yeah, they definitely are. Potlucks and cookouts.
Yes, cookouts. They're great. People have great memories, share stuff. This is a great opportunity to talk about politics. Or not. Is there, yeah. Don't people hitting one another.
Yeah, hit it.
Yes, sir.
I am.
Okay. Listen, this has been a great interview. I just want to show a different side of what we can do in the connections and network that we're trying to have. I'm trying to give a different feel when it comes down to Clubhouse and my image. So, if my music is too loud, is it working good?
It's working
good.
Yeah,
we can hear you good.
Okay. David, I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on and having a real conversation. This is the type of dialogue that people don't get enough of, being honest, uncomfortable, but necessary. To everyone listening, this is a conversation made. You may think the questions sometimes that, I'm sorry, I'm trying to work at the same time. I got another meeting coming on. And I'm trying to go through all these details. I'm so sorry. Focus. Everyone listening, if this conversation made you think, question something, or even challenge your perspective, that was the point, right, David? That was the point. It was to challenge, make you think, and you know, come up with a different perspective, right? So make sure that you guys like, subscribe, and share this with someone that you know who's ready to hear a real conversation. Thanks for coming to the Fauna Club Rooftop Talk with your boy Yale and my host here, David Dixon. Appreciate you for coming out. Let's go.
Right on. Act. Jaywalk around like I was your fool. Cause being who I am, I can't lose my cool. My friends keep telling me about things going on, but deep in my heart, babe, I hope that I'm wrong.
Right, so, alright, before we even do that, keep it a little. So, David, is there anything that you want to say to close this out? That's the question.
You know, each one of us probably had some idea pop up of something that we can do, that they can do. Do that. Just one step at a time. Get out there, talk to more people, try to reach out, listen in, try to find some emotional connection, share that, and try other things. Do what Farmer was talking about. Go out in the parks, meet new people, interact with others, and get off those phones.
That's your message. Interaction and get off those phones. So look, we're going to end this room in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Thank you for coming out to the Fauna Club Rooftop Talk.
No doubt, time to have a wild party at the Yellow House, yell it out, invites only, don't tell no slouch. How you feel around some made cats, Philly on chill, lay back with the Alizé, Millie's Brazil, conversating like some more pimps caught in the mix.